and the accounts yesterday. That shows, just like the Big Red Bench, that they are €55 million in debt. We'll be discussing that a little bit later on with Gavin Cooney of the 42.ie. And we'll also discuss it with Neil Horgan, the former Cork City player, who will be along to discuss his new book as well. We're also going to keep you up to date on everything that's happened today. Manchester United have just gone 2-0 up away to Manchester City. We'll get your match report on that in a little bit. We'll have plenty more besides you listening to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. Rory here with you until 7 p.m. this evening. If you'd like to get in touch, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the FBI and what's gone on and the staggering amount of debt that was revealed yesterday in that press conference. £55 million. Let me know what you think. 086-8104-106 by text or WhatsApp, or tweet us as well at Big Red Bench. Manchester United, as I said, 2-0 up on Manchester City in the evening Premier League game in that Manchester derby, and fully deserved, it has to be said as well. They've been the better team by far in the opening half an hour. Marcus Rashford putting the Red Devils ahead thanks to a penalty that was given after a VAR, and Anthony Martial has just added United's second there, so United looking very, very well there indeed. Elsewhere today in the early kickoffs, in the 3 p.m. kickoffs, I should say, Liverpool going 11 points clear at the top of the table with a win away to Bournemouth. Peter Hood.
Bournemouth 0, Liverpool 3. The Merseyside juggernaut that is Liverpool rolls on with another comprehensive victory. The unbeaten run now stretched to 33 thanks to goals from Oxlade-Chamberlain, Keita and Salah in the space of 20 minutes either side of half time. They were always in control, were the visitors. Their goalkeeper had little to do throughout, and even though they lost Lovren to injury, and so did Bournemouth, they were hindered more by the loss of Ake. It finished Bournemouth 0, Liverpool 3.
So 11 points clear now at the top of the table for the Reds. It's their club record unbeaten run now. It's up to 33 top flight games. Manager Jurgen Klopp, happy enough?
We scored wonderful goals. We really had other big chances, and the result is obviously most important, but the performance was really good as well. It was in the second half especially really, really professional, really mature. That's what we have to be in the moment.
They're looking very good, aren't they, Liverpool? Winning games, winning well like they did today. Certainly has the look of Premier League champions, but a very, very early days. It's still in December, obviously. But the Reds certainly looking very, very good, very, very solid, very, very confident, very, very composed as they go in search of their first league title in 30 years. Alright, Troy Parrott making his debut for Tottenham today as a second half substitute. Andrew Cheel.
Tottenham 5, Burnley 0. Spurs roared into a 2-0 lead inside 9 minutes. Harry Kane from 25 yards and Lucas Moura a 2-yard tap-in. Son with a 70-yard Olympic sprint and a cool finish made it 3 at the break. Son was unstoppable all game. Kane crashed in number 4 from 18 yards, then set up Sissoko for number 5. Brady did head against the bar for Burnley in the first half, but Spurs were rampant throughout. Spurs 5, Burnley 0.
There was a lovely moment at the end of that game where Jose Mourinho got the match ball and gave it to Troy Parrott. Just made a point of making it, giving to him as a memento as his first Premier League game. Certainly, who looks like, hopefully, that Jose sees Troy Parrott as a Tottenham player, Tottenham star for the future, as we all are very, very well aware of his potential. So a nice little touch from Jose just to give the match ball on his Premier League debut today, and a nice win as well for Spurs after they bounced back from that defeat to Manchester United earlier on in the week. Watford and Palace playing out in an all draw today. Mike Lawrence.
Watford 0, Crystal Palace 0. Watford caretaker manager Hayden Mullins hands over the reins to Nigel Pearson, having picked up a valuable point and kept a rare clean sheet against his former club. Roy Hodgson's injury-ravaged Palace side just couldn't find a way to break down the Watford defence in a bad-tempered game between these two old rivals, but with little in the way of quality. Watford looked most likely to score, but De La Feu and Saar both missed golden chances. Watford 0, Crystal Palace 0.
And Everton are back to winning ways in Duncan Ferguson's first game in temporary charge. They beat Chelsea in the early kickoff today. Shane Pinnington.
Everton 3, Chelsea 1, and Duncan Ferguson gets off to the perfect start then as Everton manager after his side produced a terrific display to see off Chelsea. Richarlison headed them in front after 5 minutes, and it was 2 when Dominic Calvert-Lewin slotted home after Zoumic sliced the clearance. Mateo Kovacic volleyed home from 25 yards to get Chelsea back in it, but Calvert-Lewin second of the game after more poor Chelsea defending, killed the game off and moved Everton out of the bottom three. Everton 3, Chelsea 1.
And boy, oh boy, did Duncan Ferguson celebrate each and every one of those goals, picking up all the boys to celebrate with them. Great to see. And good to see Everton back to winning ways as well. No surprise that Marco Silva was sacked given their current run, or the run previous to that, but that was a much needed win for Everton today. So that sees them up to 14th place, 2 points clear of the relegation zone. A number of teams though have yet to play below them, and Liverpool, as we mentioned, 11 points clear at the top of the Premier League table. Elsewhere today in the Munster Senior League, College Corinthians and UCC finished scoreless earlier on this afternoon. Rugby, Munster back in Champions Cup action this evening. They are hosting Saracens at Thomond Park, and the Reds are leading by 8-0. They've just gotten a try, JJ Hanrahan with the penalty for the Reds to open the scoring. We'll reach that try score in a bit, but Munster captain, it's the captain actually, Peter O'Mahony. He goes over the line on the half hour mark, so fantastic. I'd see the Reds ahead there against the reigning European champions at Thomond Park. Elsewhere, last gasp, John Cooney penalty saw Ulster fight back from 9 points down to beat Harlequins 25 points to 24 this afternoon. Leinster scored 7 tries in their way to a bonus point win over Northampton in Pool 1 today. And a 4 second half tries helping Leo Collins' side secure the win after they led 19-16 at half time, though concerns about Johnny Sexton, who was forced off through injury early in the second half. Collins says the extent of the damage will be assessed in the coming days.
Johnny's taken a bang to the knees, so again we'll get assessed either if he gets scanned either tomorrow or on Monday, so see what that says. He's in a little bit of discomfort there, so doesn't look fantastic for next week, but we'll see how much damage he has done to himself.
Munster have added the conversion there, so they are now leading Saracens at 10 points to 0. Just over half an hour gone there at Thomond Park. In basketball today in the Women's Super League, Father Matthews hosting Leicester. That game is underway, so we'll get you a score on that one in just a bit. Elsewhere, Super Value, Singleton Super Value Brunel going to WIT Wildcats. 7 o'clock is the tip-off time for that one. Half-time actually in that game, Father Matthews leading Leicester 33 points to 13. The men Super League, Collins CNS Neptune visiting Tralee Warriors at 7:30. In the Premier One Under 21 Hurling Championship quarter final, Sarsfield's beating Douglas today 122 to 7 points. Elsewhere, Killeitas are taking on Blackrock, and the latest score we have from there, that game being played on the 4G pitch in Porky Cuevas. The Rockies with a comfortable lead after 9 minutes. They lead 2-4 to 3 points. 9 minutes gone on the clock there. Paul Galvin's reign as Wexford and football manager meanwhile off to a losing start. Defending champions Westmeath beating the Kerry native side 111 to 11 points in the Bord na Mona O'Byrne Cup today. Jack O'Connor's first game in charge of Kildare also ending in defeat. Longford overcoming the Lilywhites 214 to 14 points at St Connolly's Park. And in today's other games, Carlow beating Wicklow 25 to 8 points, and Offaly getting the better of Leash by 2 points on a scoreline of 117 212. Racing, Defy Desire won the Grade 1 Tingle Creek at Sandown. The William Mullins trained in Disco, of course, with all those Cork connections, was in second. Snooker Ding Junhui is into the UK Championship final. He's beaten his compatriot Yan Bing Tao 6-2 in York today. Ding will now face Northern Ireland's Mark Allen or the Scots Stephen Maguire in tomorrow's Best of 19 final. They get underway later on this evening. In swimming, Mona McSherry's missed out on the medal in the 100 metres breaststroke at the European Short Course Championships. The Sligo swimmer finishing fourth in the final in Glasgow earlier on today. Now, a massive night for Kildare native Dennis Hogan as well, as he goes in search of a world title. He faces WBC middleweight champion Jermell Charlo at the Barclays Centre in Brooklyn tonight. Very, very best of luck indeed to Dennis Hogan. That fight headlining a card with Chris Eubank Jr. also in action. He takes on Matt Korobov. And of course, Saudi Arabia, the controversial venue for the rematch of Andy Ruiz Jr. and Anthony Joshua Ruiz, shocking the world in June. And he stopped Joshua to claim the WBA, IBF and WBO heavyweight titles. It's actually raining in Saudi Arabia ahead of that, so hopefully it'll clear up by the time they get into the ring at about 8:45 tonight. Now, they had their weigh-ins yesterday, and there is a little bit of a weight difference, as Ruiz Jr. weighed in over 3 stone heavier Joshua slimming down, looking a bit thinner, a bit leaner, as he wants to get speed and back into his game, and maybe sacrifice a little power in doing so. But he reckons the weight difference just won't matter tomorrow.
They should make a super heavyweight division, do you know what I mean? Because it is that much of a vast difference, but the art of the game is to hit and not get hit and avoid them punches, you know? Imagine being 3 stone heavy and everyone says how fast he is. I'll definitely be beating him to the punch tomorrow night.
Yeah, absolutely. Really looking forward to that fight tonight. So at about 8:45 is, I think, the walk-ins today. But Ruiz Jr. weighing in at 20 stone 3 pounds, 3 stone heavier than his opponent, 16 stone 13, more than 3 stone actually. So he's one of the heaviest heavyweights of all time, Ruiz Jr. Looking forward to that fight though. And as I said, 8:45 in Saudi Arabia is, I think, is the scheduled time for the walkouts tonight. All right, Manchester United still 2-0 up on Manchester City. 40 minutes now gone on the clock at the Etihad Stadium. We get a report from Darren Stanage.
Manchester City 0, Manchester United 2. The visitors thoroughly deserving their lead. They took the lead on 19 minutes. Marcus Rashford fouled in the box. The referee didn't give it, but VAR awarded a penalty. Rashford converted for 1-0. Rashford had a great chance after a wonderful United counter to make it 2, but he fluffed it after a great ball from Fred. But on 28 minutes, Anthony Martial steered the ball home after some good interchange with Daniel James. The Etihad pretty stunned at the moment. City 0, United 2.
And as Darren mentioned there, United certainly good value for that win, or that lead, I should say, getting a bit ahead of myself there, for that lead today. All right, we're going to start by talking about, obviously, the story everyone's talking about. The FBI announcing yesterday they have liabilities exceeding 55 million euro. They're looking to remortgage their debt in the Aviva Stadium until 2034 following the publication of their 2018 accounts yesterday. Not good news anywhere. Dark day in the history of Irish football. The paper's going to town on it today. We were talking to Gavin Cooney about this in just a little bit, but one of the darkest days in the history of football in this country. Now, one of the headlines, former chief executive John Delaney receiving a severance package of €462,000 in September, and the termination of Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane's contract cost the association a total of €1.9 million. The account auditors, Deloitte, are unable to state that the FBI remains a going concern. So dark days indeed. The knock-on effects it's going to have for football in this country, and we can only guess, but it's not going to make for pleasant reading in the papers over the next while. Really, really bad news yesterday. The FAI President Donald Conway, meanwhile, announcing he's going to be standing down from his position at an EGM next month. Conway still believes the FAI has a future in its current guise.
And I would see us going forward. I do believe this is the most significant sport in the world. We're responsible for that sport in this country. Our national teams are a huge, valuable property. I would see us being able to push forward from here on.
Rather worryingly, as we mentioned, the liabilities stand at €55 million. That's about €30 million in bank debt as well, includes that. Executive leader of the association, Paul Cook, says the ongoing investigations may unveil further liabilities.
I think, as I said, today is a day we're drawing a line under it. We're moving forward. As far as, you know, everything I can see is in those accounts. Now, obviously, again, with one caveat, I've mentioned there's investigations going on. They might throw up other liabilities. But other than that, we are very comfortable that those figures represent the true position.
The Minister for Sport, Shane Ross, says the accounts are pretty horrifying and very scary. And he says he's surprised at how bad the situation has become for the body.
Well, I think the figures that we come out, and a debt figure of 55 million, is pretty horrifying and very scary, and a terrible reflection of the state of affairs that the FAI is in. I'm surprised. I've heard some pretty awful stories, but I didn't think it was as bad as that.
Robbie Butler is an economics lecturer at UCC, and he says securing new sponsorships is vital for the FAI's very survival.
I think replacing them with a sponsorship agreement that's going to be of similar standing is very, very important. I think the other thing that's crucially important is convincing the government that they can reinstate the nearly €3 million that goes towards grassroots football. In the grander scheme of things, when you're turning over 40, 45 million, you know, it isn't as significant as some might believe, but it is a significant amount of money, particularly when you're losing 8-9 million a year.
As we mentioned, one of the big headlines was Delaney's settlement, €462,000, the former CEO resigning from his role in September before the delivery of the KOSI report into the FAI's finances. Questions, of course, raised with the timing of his exit. But Professional Football Association of Ireland solicitor Stuart Gilhooley says their decision to get rid of John Delaney when they did was a wise one. And the figure of €462,000 could have been a lot more.
He had this agreement with certain board members with the Remuneration Committee where he would be entitled to this €3 million bonus in 2021. And his argument would have been all along, look, that's my entitlement. I have a claim here for €3 million. If he got sacked, which he would have been sacked, he would have brought a legal claim. There would have been costs associated with that. There would have been a possibility that if he won, that he could have been entitled to €3 million. I think getting out of it for €462,000, I know it seems unpalatable to people, it probably wasn't the worst deal in the world.
Not the worst deal in the world. €462,000 is what John Delaney left the association with as part of his settlement. Now, for more on it, I spoke to the 42.ie's Gavin Cooney earlier on today. Gavin's been doing some fantastic reporting on the whole FAI affair over the past couple of months. So check him out on the 42.ie. He's had a fantastic article in today's the 42.ie today, which says that years of greed mismanagement exposed and it leaves Irish football looking at a lost generation. Gavin certainly pulling no punches, and I spoke to him earlier on today. A sensational day yesterday. Gavin, my jaw dropped open several times yesterday reading the accounts. What was your reaction?
Yeah, I think it was similar for all of the journalists in the room. They needed to employ FAI staff just to come in and scoop our goals off the floor every now and again. We were warned that it was going to be bad. Paul Cook, the vice president and now the interim executive lead, had said a couple of months ago that the figures will cause shock. I think they caused more shock than was anticipated. The top line figures, I suppose, is the fact that the Football Association of Ireland have now net liabilities of €55 million, and in the middle of all that had to pay off the former CEO and former executive vice president, lest we deny him that title, John Delaney, a settlement of €462,000. Just to go through with some of the other things that sums up the absolute shambles that the FAI has become. Their top sponsor, Three, they pulled out, they won't be renewing their contract next year. There is currently no state funding going to the FAI. The stadium that we were told by John Delaney could have been debt-free by 2020, well, that's now got a 15-year mortgage on it, so realign that little soundbite to debt-free by 2034, and it might even be stadium-free by 2020 because the FAI board have discussed the possibility of selling their 50% stake in the Aviva Stadium. Now, they've discussed that at board level. It is, however, unlikely to happen because now outgoing President Donal Conway said that it's a complicated situation and it might not even be possible to sell their stake in the stadium. Just a couple more blizzard of figures before I let everyone come up for air. The FAI, because they're a sporting body, they're exempt from corporation tax, yet because they've been found with the significant underpayment of employment taxes and VAT liabilities, they've made a voluntary disclosure of €2.7 million to the revenue, which the revenue has yet to properly accept. The accounts that previously showed surpluses have now been adjusted and they now show losses. For example, the 2017 accounts showed that the FAI turned a €2.75 million surplus. Well, when that's adjusted to include figures, which includes John Delaney's remuneration, that actually reads €2.9 million deficit. And the FAI are still under investigation from the Office for the Director of Corporate Enforcement, and they are now negotiating a finance package with their bank in order to stay afloat. They're reliant on early drawdowns from UEFA to stay afloat, and their auditors, Deloitte, refuse to sign off and agree that the FAI are a going concern.
So taking a breath after hearing those figures is right, Gavin. How did it get to this stage? I mean, like, this seems like it was kind of swept under the carpet over the last couple of years. Sure, everything is grand.
Yeah, I think there was not enough. There was clearly not enough oversight in the FAI and criticism for in the last few years of John Delaney's tenure as chief executive. Criticism was pretty ruthlessly shut down. I mean, Paul Cook, who most of the country will know now because he was front and centre yesterday, he was actually a critical voice during the Delaney years, particularly around the financing of the Aviva Stadium and the loan repayments. And he asked the question from the floor of an AGM in 2009, and that became the last question that was asked for, by anyone from the floor until this year. Post AGM press conferences ended a couple of years ago. So there wasn't enough criticism, there wasn't enough analysis of the accounts in particular. I know plenty of council members have been can reflect now that they spent too long in the last few years as nodding dogs. They will point at the fact that, well, the accounts weren't as stark as they are today, and that's a fair criticism. That may shed may put a bit of little bit of scrutiny on the auditors Deloitte. What they have said, they have filed a H4 notice to say that proper books of accounts have not been kept. So perhaps that they were not fully informed or informed to the level that perhaps they should have been.
The big question, I suppose, on everyone's lips now, Gavin, is what impact is this going to have on the FAI Irish football as a whole, basically?
Well, I mean, the details on that were not forthcoming yesterday. I think take it as a general rule that those who deserve to suffer the least will suffer the most. There will be... Paul Cook has said there will be consequences of this, and for consequences, read job losses. The exact now where those job losses will be, we haven't been told yet. Paul Cook very fair and said that we will tell the staff that first, rather than tell the media, which I think is entirely fair. But it will hit grassroots programs. I mean, there's no way in which it doesn't hit grassroots programs. And I think if you just cast your mind a little bit into the future, and when we're living in years to come, when kids are playing Gaelic football and hurling rather than soccer, when the rugby team are getting far more sponsors and media attention than the soccer team, when the women's team have failed to keep pace with a massively growing sport, when the men's team are now losing these games in Georgia and not qualifying for European championships, which will surely be about 60 teams or 48 team tournaments by then, and you're looking for the reason why all that is happening in the future, look back and open these 2018 FAI accounts. It was an appalling day for Irish football yesterday. It laid bare the level of greed and excess and the total lack of oversight of the last few years. And it is a debt that Irish football will be paying for years to come.
And John Delaney, I think, is kind of going to be the man that I suppose most people will kind of focus their eye on and their attention on, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was the face of the FAI for many years. And whenever there was good news, John Delaney was front and centre. Look back over press releases of any kind of infrastructure projects or anything like that, even from League of Ireland or Schoolboy or whatever, they would always pay praise to John Delaney. So he's gone now. I mean, he's gone off with a settlement of €462,000. The reason he was entitled to that was because in his contract renewal in 2014, which was due to expire in 2021, the FAI centenary year, he had negotiated for himself an overall bonus package of €3 million. That's a €1 million loyalty payment and €2 million in deferred pension payments. So that's the reason that the FAI had to cut a deal and had to pay him €462,000 just to deal with it all. The new board members have said, look, we didn't want to pay it. I mean, it's a bad payment, but look, it's the best of a series of bad choices, because otherwise they may have been liable for more than €2 million, and they could risk their day in court, but who's to say that they would have won?
You had tweeted yesterday, Gavin, that you'd hope that this is rock bottom. The only way is up now, I guess.
I mean, you'd hope so. I mean, pinpointing rock bottom is a curious kind of optimism, in the sense that things can't get any worse. Now, I asked Paul Cook yesterday, is this rock bottom? And he said yes, that he thinks it is. But, I hope it is. But, I mean, the investigation by the Gardaí and the Office for the Director of Corporate Enforcement is ongoing. God knows what that will throw up. I mean, Paul Cook said yes. I mean, look, that could lead to more liabilities and that could shock it further. But we're pretty sure that these accounts show the full state of the FAI at the moment, and we can work on from there. So things could, I think things could yet get worse. And they will get worse for the people who will lose their jobs. And there are people, like really hardworking people at the FAI at the moment, who are not on particularly good money, who are coming into Christmas now fretting for their future, and if not their future, for the future of their colleagues. It's really outrageous, and it's difficult to sum up. I mean, yesterday there was just this blizzard of figure after figure after figure. Like, we were only given the accounts as the press conference was the beginning. So you had Paul Cook throwing these top-line figures And they're mostly a football journalist and a few news journalists. Like, none of us are accountants, really, but like every figure is just figure after figure after figure. And it was just, it was unbelievable. It was an unbelievable day.
Yeah, dark, dark day indeed. Gavin, we'll leave it there. It wasn't pleasant listening over the last 10 minutes, but thanks very much for coming on.
No problem.
Yeah, awesome. Pleasure having Gavin Cooney of the 42.ie on with us to discuss. I'm exasperated. I find it hard to put into words how much of a hole the FAI is in and how it's gotten to this point. But Gavin did a good job of explaining yesterday's press conference to us there, and I thank him. You can check Gavin out on the 42.ie. Halftime at Old Trafford, Manchester United are leading Manchester, or not Old Trafford, at the Etihad, I do beg your pardon, and it is Manchester United leading City 2-0 in the Manchester derby at halftime. Marcus Rashford's penalty, going to go guff Anthony Martial, putting the Red Devils ahead there against City. And at halftime in Thomond Park, Munster leading Saracens 10 points to 3 at the break. That try coming from Peter O'Mahony just after half an hour. But Munster now have to play into the wind and rain in the second half, so it's going to be an interesting second half ahead against the reigning European champions. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Neil Horgan about the situation at the FAI and the relationship with the League of Ireland over the last couple of years. Neil's going to talk about his new book as well.
Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Cork's Red FM.
All right, glad you could join us for the Big Red Bench on this Saturday evening. Half time, the Under 21 Premier One Hurling Championship. And it's Blackrock leading Killeitas 2-8 to 10 points. Half time at Old Trafford. All right, just said it again. It's halftime at the Etihad Stadium. It's because Manchester United are winning again. I'm getting all confused. Ernst Hanage.
City nil, United 2 at the break. City stunned from an excellent first 45 from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's side. Edison had made 3 early saves before VAR awarded a United penalty for a foul on Rashford. He converted it. Rashford missed a great chance for a second before Martial slotted home on 28 minutes after good link-up play with James. City haven't forced De Gea into any meaningful saves. United who defended well, but City did want a penalty right at the death of the first half for a potential handball against Fred. It's going to be an interesting second half. City nil, United 2.
Certainly will be. And at half time at Thomond Park, Munster leading Saracens 10-3. Also half time, Racing 28-7 up away to Ospreys. All right, for more on the FAI story, joined by Neil Horgan earlier on today to discuss his new book primarily, but we also discussed the FAI and the accounts from yesterday and the relationship the association has had with the League of Ireland over the last couple of years. Neil's new book is called The Crossroads, Rise of the Rebel Army and Crisis at the FAI.
I'm good, Rory. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks very much indeed for coming in. Writing the third book, was it easier than writing the first two?
Yeah, I suppose so. I had the format from the last two in terms of it being part diary, part interview. And I obviously had the diaries kept from when I was playing kind of during the Tommy Dunn era. So it was just putting them together. I knew how to get the book out. There was a little addition in terms of having a kind of substantial go off the FAI.
Yeah.
Which turns out to be a kind of...
prophetic.
Yeah, prophetic in some sense, yeah. I had always been kind of having a go off them, particularly in Second City, the second book. But then at the end, I suppose there's a chapter there, it's FAI on the brink. So the situation, I suppose, that occurred and has led up to yesterday or whatever, the recent debacle with the FAI, that kind of had to become part of the book as I was finishing it.
Mm. I suppose it brings your career full circle, I guess, because it comes up to the end of your playing career.
Yeah, it does. So as I always get mocked about, I retired and then came back, had a testimonial, took the funds and then came back, but came back as an amateur, I suppose, which was different in many ways, and obviously primarily because you don't get paid. So, but it was a lovely thing because the club had gone under, well, the holding company had gone under, but we're looking back at 2009 here, so the fans took over the club and ultimately it's documenting that from my point of view, because I think, you know, I think Forest at some point will bring out a book from their point of view, but this was from my point of view as a player coming back to kind of help them, and it was a different club. As much as it was the same club, the fans now ran it, so it was very interesting, and it was great as we were talking about just before we came on, that first season winning the first division was like, you know, a real highlight of my career, and it was something I was delighted I had some diary there to talk about.
Because it's such an amazing story, that 2010-2011 period of, like, you almost go to the wall. You go up to Derry City with 13 players for your first game, then the next season you're promoted to the Premier Division. It's an incredible story.
Yeah, I think it is. I think Tommy did a brilliant job. I know I make him across harsh and Tommy at times in this, or it might seem like that, but I think Tommy did a brilliant job in getting us promoted that year. He was under a bit of pressure. Roddy Collins was after him a little bit, giving him stick in the media, and he did a great job. And it was to win it on the last day of the season, Graham Cummins' goal at the last whatever 2 minutes. It was incredible, and it was, I think that moment will live long with a lot of people, because we'd come through so much, the club, the players, the fans, leading to the, you know, the demise and the being thrown out of the Premier Division. To come back in that format was just something that was really, really memorable.
Yeah, it certainly was. And there seemed to be a massive togetherness between the fans and the players at that point. Like, everyone was all in it together now.
Yeah, there was, and again, Tommy deserves credit. I'm making up for the book here, Tommy, if you're listening. No, he does. We had a nice crew, like the guys who came in that year. I hadn't played with Graham Cummins before that year. I know he was there the year before, but I kind of came in very late. I think Billy Woods came in. This was 2010. So the year we went up was 2011. I think 2011. So the Forest come back and they finished sixth. I played a few games at the end of the season, and it was kind of, you know, we had lost all our kind of full time pros, really. So the likes of, you know, Dan Murray, can't think who we had, you know, Pat Sullivan, Mick Devine was gone, all the midfield, you know, Joe Gamble. Who else used to play with us? Liam Kearney. We had none of these players anymore. So we were kind of guys who were part time, or some who had stayed. Greg O'Halloran was an important player. Killian Lorden was an important player for us, and Graham Cummins. And we had a few quality players who came in who made the difference, really, like Davin O'Neill and Vinnie Sullivan. Had that little bit of class, particularly for the first division, that allowed us to get through. Also, Danny Murphy coming back was a big thing. And I document that a bit in the book about the fullbacks and the relationship between fullbacks, because I'd be different to Danny in terms of, I'd have been certainly at this point in my career, I'd been conservative.
You didn't really cross the halfway line.
Legs were gone. But Danny is a few years on me. He must be, you know, he might have been 26 at this point. So he was in the peak of his career at this time. But it was great to see Danny coming back, because then straight away I knew my side of the pitch. I could talk across to him, and we could manage what was in between us. We got a great group together. Trying to think of the other players there now in the middle of the park. Shane Duggan was a very good player. Grown Morrissey starts to feature. So it's a new, like, some of this was guys who would end up becoming part of the double winning team under John Caulfield. So that's a lovely part of that. Also, we had Nulty and Goal who started to become, you know.
And Greg O'Halloran as well.
And Greg. Greg was outstanding. He was the captain, actually, so Greg could play centre back, midfield, right back, left back, as always, and a great character to have around. And luckily enough, we had enough guys, kind of, I think, who had enough experience to bring us up that year. Because Shells were decent. Shells had a good team as well. And they thought they'd won it, really.
They were so far ahead.
Yeah, I don't know how far ahead. They were like 10, 15 points ahead at one point, and we were under pressure because, like, you know, Roddy Collins was saying, like, and did say in the paper, like, that you should have left me in the job, and this was Tommy Dunn is, you know, he's not enough of a man to have taken it. He's a boy doing a man's job, I think was his quote. Like, so he was managing Monaghan, Roddy Collins, and they were putting money into Monaghan at the time before they went out of existence. There was a lot of pressure, and luckily it paid off in terms of going up that year, and the rest is history, as they say.
It certainly is. Do you enjoy, like, reflecting on this time when you're writing it?
I do. I love documenting it, because I think apart from the fans, I think the players who were involved in it appreciated a lot, you know, as well. It's nice to bring back memories. I was going to talk to someone today, actually, who was telling me they had forgotten about the issues we had kind of with Forest at the start. There was a bonus issue.
Yeah.
As if, you know, so it's good to remember things in their order. And then I do enjoy then putting that all out together. It kind of helps me to kind of frame it, because I have a terrible memory.
Tell you what, diaries.
Yeah, well, it was one of the reasons. But yeah, I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed all three books, you know. And this one, as I said, takes a different slant towards the FAI towards the end, which I think rounds it up nicely, because ultimately the League of Ireland has been in a negligent state, or has been in a low state, a state of poverty as such, and the FAI have done nothing about it over, you know, 100 years. We were saying this the last two books I was in here, exactly. Rory, doing with you. And now, you know, there's no great triumph in finding out that the FAI were, you know, acting very, you know, scandalously, as it turns out. Mm. But in fact, they were, like, while we were going under, the FAI were paying out large amounts of money to their CEO, which you can't stand over, you know.
No. Were you surprised when you kind of read the papers today and then look at the summaries from yesterday?
I think there's an element of surprise and I think everyone's in the same boat to a degree here with the level of the debt. But on the other hand, there's no surprise in another way as well, you know. I think, I suppose, it's been a lead up to the accounts being revealed, and, you know, people are kind of knew they were going to be bad, and I think a few of them had said that they're going to be worse than you think. But I think there's more information to be, you know, taken from it. Where exactly there's a few details missing about, for example, what kind of money was going to League of Ireland, and what role, if any, the League of Ireland played in all of this, you know. So I think there's a lot of kind of viewing to be done by other people, before we find out, you know, the scale. Because figures is one thing, but details is another, and I think there's a bit of detail lacking.
And it's obviously going to have a massive knock-on negative effect for Irish football for years, maybe decades to come now.
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, they're talking about the Aviva mortgage going out to 2036 or something like that. This was something
that was supposed to be paid off next year.
And even like that, I was never happy with that myself. Like, you know, I don't want to be double guessing everything the FAI did in retrospect or whatever, but from my own point of view, they were using the Aviva as a reason that they couldn't put money into the League of Ireland. Mm-hmm. And like, whether that was legitimate or not, I don't think it was a good decision for something that ultimately they weren't going to end up owning either. Mm. Like, they were just leasing it. It was one of the reasons I put the Aviva on the front of my cover, actually.
Yeah, it's a great company.
Thanks, Rory. Because I did think that, some people said to me at the start, you kind of throw covers at people and say, what do you think? Mm. And they were like, well, is it about the FAI? And I was like, yeah, it actually is. You know, it actually is. Underneath all of this, all our problems, was like something consistent that I've said throughout the books, is that there's been a lack of, a total lack of belief in Irish domestic football by the FAI, and a lack of planning for it. And I think instead of that, they wanted to plan this stadium. Which, you know, it's a nice stadium, and, you know, it Lansdowne did need an upgrade, but I wouldn't have sacrificed domestic football for it, like,
no.
Which I think is what they did.
Yeah, but I mean, like, we always, I suppose, say that as League of Ireland fans of the FAI, it's easy to say the FAI don't care about the League of Ireland.
But yeah,
it's certainly looking that way.
Yeah, I mean, how can you stand over what the accounts are now? The 3 million payment that they were going to make to John Delaney. I mean, he's CEO of the FAI, but, you know, it's something I go into a bit in the afterword of the book, and it's about the approach the FAI have kind of taken. And I don't think, to be fair to him, I don't think it started with John Delaney. This happened at some point where they just decided they were the cream of the crop in Irish football circles, along with the national team, and everyone else was below them. And I think whenever that happened, they've never gone away from that. It's got worse. Like, it seemed like John Delaney was the, you know, president elect extraordinaire of the FAI.
He's a celebrity more than a
celebrity.
CEO.
No, you know, and I think that occurred over a long period of time and got worse. And I think it's been a really unhealthy thing to happen to Irish football. And unfortunately, they didn't have enough moral kind of code, or they didn't have enough knowledge of their duties and responsibilities to the game, and how the game was crying out for assistance from the top, if they deemed themselves the top.
Yeah.
And they didn't provide it. Instead, it looks like they're, you know, filling their own pockets. That's what it looks like. And getting Irish football into this mess. Mm. And that's, I mean, that's...
It's heartbreaking as a football fan.
It's disgusting. And it's hard to get away from that, you know. No, it's not. And I would be first to say it's this isn't just a John Delaney problem. This is an FAI problem. Mm. And, you know, this is what the question inevitably leads on to is what's next for the FAI? And I suppose one way of looking at this is if Delaney's gone, you know, we can get on with things, kind of. But I don't know about that. It's really on the brink. Yeah. I think it's really on the brink. There's a real question there now whether it's salvageable at all, you know.
Mm.
I was only looking it up today, I think there is a precedent with the Swimming Ireland, and I think it used to be called Amateur Swimming Ireland before. I think they had a kind of sexual abuse massive scandal, and they re-emerged as Irish swimming or whatever. I think you could see it happening, because you know, people are talking about, if you were a commercial entity, why would you be getting involved with the FAI in this context? And it's a very real issue. All that being said, there's lots of people working in the FAI who are very good, and nobody wants people losing their jobs, particularly when they're very good, and that's very true. So hopefully it can be salvaged, but it's a question mark at this point.
Yeah, it's run a precipice, I think. We can go one way or the other.
Crossroads, I'd call it.
Crossroads. Which brings us back nicely, Neil, to your book, The Crossroads, Rise of the Rebel Army and Crisis at the FBI, available on Amazon, and it's available at the Cork City Shop in Manpointville.
Yeah, it is. So I think particularly fans of the earlier books will really like it. I think it rounds off the three, and from my point of view, kind of takes on the FBI a little bit further than it had before, just because the material was available. Like the revelations over the last few years. So the timeline for your listeners, where I have three diaries, seasons, I suppose, under Tommy Dunn. We go up for 2 years in the Premier Division. John Caulfield comes in then at that point, and I'm kind of at the end of my... I was at the end of it about 3 years before that, but I'm at the very end, and I helped John to some extent come in, and great to see him do so well.
Yeah.
So there's an interview with John Caulfield, which kind of goes over his period of success and kind of brings us that and other document or other kind of reports, brings us right up to date with the current events in the FAI, and actually it ends at the AGM at the FAI, where they were looking for a cultural change. But I think, like, some of this, the horse has bolted now.
You'll have to write an epilogue, I think, after yesterday, will you?
Yeah, I'll have to an epilogue to Tommy Dunn to apologise if he comes out. You were telling me you read it and you felt Neil doesn't get on with Tommy.
Neil like Tommy.
I do like Tommy. I want to put that on record. I just probably was going through a stressful time. Yeah. And nice, actually, sometimes. Yeah. You look back at the diary and you kind of identify, oh, you were under stress there. Because we were trying to win the league, and actually Tommy was kind of a friend of mine at that point, because I was an amateur. So, you know, if you're an amateur player, not I was doing him a favour, but...
You didn't need it.
Yeah, I could walk away. Yeah. Like, in this, people might note that I went to a wedding. There was one of my best friend's weddings, and I was like, look, Tommy, these are the conditions. Like, you know, I'm coming back under my own terms as such, and I'm happy to play for you then. So then that meant, you know, myself and Tommy's relationship was different to the other players, essentially, some of the time. And so that meant, the other side to that is, like, I almost felt part of his management team.
Mm-hmm.
So I was stressed when he was stressed. But no, I think, and look, Tommy did a brilliant job, and it'd be nice to see him back in Irish football. I think he's in Finland at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it is. I think a few people in this, Graham Cummins in particular, credits Tommy massively with the coming back in the first division.
Yeah.
And look, like from a Cork City point of view, because that's the thing with this book, it kind of deals with both the FA and Cork City. But from a Cork City point of view, we mightn't be in the position where we are now. I know there's, you know, there's some controversy recently, you know, about a payment in respect of a VAT or whatever. But it looks very small scale compared to problems we've been in before. It looked like an innocent error from what I'm reading anyway. And in any event, we might, if we didn't go up that year in the first division, and if we didn't have John Coffin afterwards as well, we mightn't, like, the club was really in dire straits. You remember, Rory?
Yeah, I do.
And like, I know it's hard to be thankful for something when you're kind of, you know, we were used to it again, and we want, like, we had a bad season last year at Cork City, and you know, we want them back up again with Neil Fenn and Joe Gamble coming in. But you know, I think the context is we're very lucky to have a team back up in the Premier Division. Excuse me. And it's very exciting to see Neil Fenn and Joe Gamble, see what they can put together next year, you know.
Really?
And if you want an insight into Joe Gamble, I would recommend the Second City.
Neil, it's been a pleasure having you in, man. Looking forward to book four now, whenever that'll be.
Thanks, Tori.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
Yeah, always great to have our good friend Neil Horgan in on the Big Red Bench on Cork. So it's the third time he's been in to talk about his books now. And always welcome. Great to have Neil's thoughts there. On the FAI and their relationship, I suppose, to the League of Ireland, the lack of a relationship, more to the point, over the years. And this is the current situation the association finds itself in. And of course, great to talk to Neil about his book, and it's a very, very, very good read indeed, talking about the latter part of his Cork City career, the 2010-2011 campaigns. And in particular, were of great interest, and the 2011 one in particular, when Cork City won the first division title on that dramatic night away to Shelburne. Fantastic stuff indeed. So well worth checking out Neil's book, available on Amazon. You can get it at the Cork City Club shop in Mahon Point as well. Manchester United still 2-0 up away to Manchester City. There's now 61 minutes gone on the clock at the Etihad Stadium. And in rugby, Munster still 10-3 up on Saracens. That's the latest score from there. Right, before we round off the show, the Joanna Reardon podcast continues on redextra.ie and wherever you can get your podcasts from. Really, really good stuff on there recently. We had Laura Delaney and Ed Joyce of the Ireland Women's Cricket Team on in the last couple of weeks. Be sure and check out redextra.ie for more on the Joanna Reardon podcast. But in the latest episode, Joanna's been talking to Irish rugby international Jenny Murphy. Really, really good listen. The first part was released yesterday, and here's a little taste of what you can expect.
You played for Ireland since nearly 2012, but like, the start of your career was really funny, like when you got signed up and you hit your first tackle and the ref made you apologise. What happened there, like, you know? It's kind of weird in rugby, you're forced to apologise for doing something you're supposed to do.
Yeah, it was, that was, I was living over in London and had started playing with Teddington Antlers, and then got kind of, there was a premiership team nearby, Richmond, and I went to join them. And from there, their coach at the time was the Scottish national coach. I must have got seen playing, because I was playing second row and loose and in the flanks. And I got a call up to go across to Ireland to play against Ireland, just as part of Irish exiles. It kind of worked out that way. We got absolutely hockeyed in Johnstown House. I was playing a fullback. It was maybe my second or third game playing in the back, so I was pretty clueless. And I tackled one of the girls, Nikki Cockey, hit her, and I can't remember now if it was high or not, but she went out over the sideline, and the ref kind of went up to me, made me apologise to her while she was on the ground, and the head coach of Ireland at the time, Philip Doyle, Goose, was livid, absolutely livid, and I thought that it was me.
He was
angry at her. She got up fine, I think, he was pretty pissed off, and that's fine. I kind of was like, oh god, was worried about it. She didn't come back on playing, and I was a bit like, oh, is she okay? And I was like, well, that's my chances of ever playing for Ireland down the Swanee. And then it turns out later that he was just really mad at the ref for, you know, me doing my job and doing it well. So yeah, it was, that was my first meeting with Goose, the terrifying, lovely man. So yeah, it was, and then when I did get a call up after that, so they were, I got a call up to the Irish squad after that training game, and obviously I got roomed with Nikki Cockey, which was great as well. So
yeah, it was good banter.
Yeah.
But you didn't like, you were like, you were maybe like dabbling in rugby, but you weren't really kind of into it properly until you were like 19. You were playing kind of other sports, weren't you? Like your GA and you had other sports behind you. Do you think that helped you in like your rugby career, or do you think like, oh, I just wanted to try everything? Were you like one of those hyperactive children where your mom was like, go?
I was really easy to buy presents for. It was just like, get her football or football boots or a Man United jersey and she will be happy. I'll be happy out. So no, I didn't, I just didn't know there was a women's rugby team, genuinely. I would watch a little bit of it but not have a vague understanding of the rules, but Gaelic and soccer, like Gaelic football, would be the main sports that I would have played. And then when I went across to the UK to study, I was playing, you know, with the Gaelic team and the soccer team over there, and saw the college team train. They were training in the mornings at something like 7 or 8 o'clock before lectures, and then they were training at night time as well, like a few days. So it wasn't loads, but I was like, oh, I've got a bit of time, I think it would help. My
sounds
Gaelic
intense though.
Yeah, it was just, it looked difficult, it looked physically demanding, and they were probably the parts of Gaelic that I would have been good at.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'll give this a crack. It'll help my Gaelic football. It'll help my soccer. And the first training session I went to, I fell in love with it. I absolutely loved it. I was like, oh, I'm able to absolutely whack someone. I'm able to hand off somebody. I'm able to do all these things that are normally like, well, get me arrested or get me a card on the pitch. And from then, I think from that session, I was like, oh, this is something that I want to get good at. Now, I still hadn't a clue, and things snowballed really quickly for me in terms of, you know, playing college, then playing with the local Teddington team, yeah, and then from there moving to Richmond, and then getting a chance at playing with Ireland. So, but it was pretty good. I'm like, there was just, you didn't know the sports, the women's rugby team was here. The first time I knew that there was an Irish women's rugby team, there was a World Cup in 2010 in England.
Yeah.
I randomly went to the third, fourth playoff, I think it was Australia, France, and I saw a little green tracksuits, and I was like, oh, there's a women's team.
Yeah, it's Jenny Murphy there speaking on the Joanna Reardon podcast, which is available on redextra.ie. Well worth checking out. You can tune into that on redextra.ie and wherever you get your podcast from as well. Just going to get you up to date on some scores. Munster still leading Saracens 10-3 at Thomond Park. In the Premier Under-21 Hurling Championship, Blackrock leading Killa Eaters 3-10-11. And Man City certainly knocking on the door here at the Etihad. Still yet to find a way past the United rearguard and David De Gea, more specifically. Manchester City 0, Manchester United 2 is how it stands there. 67 minutes gone on the clock at the Etihad. Alright, that's it from us. Thank you very much for tuning our way on this Saturday evening on the Big Red Bench. Stevie's up next shortly with the Block Party. 3 hours of the best, the freshest, latest music coming your way right here on Corkshell FM. We're back tomorrow evening from 6 p.m. Enjoy the rest of your night, and you can get our podcast redextra.ie and wherever you get your podcasts from. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday night, folks. We'll speak to you tomorrow at 6 p.m.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.